Hello, this is Anil Kumar from Back to the Bible radio broadcast. On the program today, we are continuing our current series, The Greatest Sermon Ever Preached, with Dr. John Neufeld. From our text, take it from Matthew chapter 5, verses 33 to 37. We will examine the topic of truth, lies, and the words we use. Let's go back to the Bible with Dr. John Neufeld.
In the days before airplane travel, people used to travel great distances on trains. You know, in those days, children aged 5 and under could travel for free, but once you turned 6, you'd have to pay. Well, a woman was speaking to her 6-year-old son and telling him, "When you get onto the train, you tell them you're 5. Well, of course, no 6-year-old wants to tell anyone they're 5, but because his mother insisted and even threatened him, well, he agreed. And as they got on board, the conductor asked the boy how old he was, and he, with his face turned to the ground in shame, answered, "I'm 5. Well, later on, as they were traveling on the train, the conductor, now with time on his hands, began to speak to the boy. He said, "So you're 5? "Yeah," said the boy. "Well, how long till you turn 6? And the boy responded, "Well, I'll be 6 just as soon as I get off this train." You know, most people tell the truth most of the time. But most people also lie when there's something significant to be gained by lying. The truth at times may cause personal embarrassment. The truth may prevent you from making that sale. The truth may cost you money. The truth may prevent you from getting that job or passing that exam. The truth may harm you significantly. And when that happens, most people lie. Psychologists claim that the average person tells between 2 to 3 lies every single day. In the book, The Day America Told the Truth, it tells us that 36% of those surveyed said that they lie about matters that are important. But how do we know that those answering the survey were not lying about that? See, we are prone to lie when in our minds it becomes important to do so. So let's read Jesus. Matthew 5, 33 to 37 records him saying, "Again you have heard it said to those of old, 'You shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn.' But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more comes from evil." Let's start by first remembering what Jesus has been teaching. You remember that Jesus is teaching from the Old Testament. He has told his followers in 5:17 that he has not come to abolish the Old Testament law. But he has issues with the way the Old Testament law is being taught, especially by the Pharisees. When it came to the 6th command, "You shall not murder," and the 7th command, "You shall not commit adultery," the Pharisees were woefully inadequate as teachers. They simply taught these things as external commands without paying attention to the implications of the commands, nor the internal transformation of the heart. Now in Matthew 5:33-37, Jesus turns his attention to the 3rd commandment. Let me read it to you. It's from Exodus 20, verse 7. "You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain." See, this commandment warns us never to use the sacred name of God in a frivolous manner. Now, from this command comes the Old Testament instruction regarding the taking of oaths. For instance, consider Leviticus 19, verse 12. "You shall not swear by my name falsely and so profane the name of your God. I am the Lord." In other words, should you invoke the sacred name to cover up a lie, you're not just lying. You're profaning the name, breaking the 3rd commandment, and with that comes the knowledge that God will not hold you guiltless. This is very serious stuff. You know, there are other Old Testament commands regarding oaths. Consider Deuteronomy 23, verse 21. "If you make a vow to the Lord your God, you shall not delay in fulfilling it, for the Lord your God will surely require it of you, and you will be guilty of sin." Now here we can see that once an oath is made using the name of God, you're then bound by it. No matter how difficult it is to keep it, once you've evoked the sacred name, you are to keep it no matter how much personal suffering was required of you. Again, Numbers 30, verse 2. "If a man vows a vow to the Lord or swears an oath to bind himself by a pledge, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth. Now, just so that we understand ourselves, very seldom does the Old Testament require anyone to take an oath. Exodus 22, verses 10 to 11, does demand the taking of an oath in a court of law when you testify to the truth of a matter. This same thing is done in our courts today. But there are other times when someone might want to take an oath without being required to do so. When Abraham, for instance, went out to fight against the kings that had kidnapped his nephew Lot, he actually made an oath to God. You can find that in Genesis 14. He makes a sacred vow that he would not keep any of the spoils of war from that battle. The most famous oath in the Bible that invokes the sacred name is found in the book of Ruth. She tells her mother-in-law that she will never leave her, and then she adds, "May the Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts me from you." In other words, Ruth bound herself by the sacred name, and that, to forsake her oath, was to bring God's curse on her life. And of course, she was as good as her word, and even more so. There are a number of these kinds of oaths that are found in the Bible. Now, let's consider one more thing about oaths before we deal with what Jesus said about them. Not only do people make them, but so does God. So here's one example between God and Abraham found in Genesis 22, verses 16 and 17. There we read, "By myself I have sworn, declares the Lord, that because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you, and I will surely multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven, as the sand that is on the seashore, and your offspring shall possess the gate of their enemies." Now please notice that when God swears, he swears by himself, for there is no greater name whereby he can swear. There are numerous examples of just that. Listen to Hebrews 7, verse 17. There it says, "So when God desired to show more convincingly to the heirs of the promise the unchangeable nature of his purpose, he guaranteed it with an oath." So what have we learned? Well, we've learned that there's nothing wrong with oaths. The great saints of the past have taken them, and God himself has done so. If we had time, I'd show that in Philippians 1 verse 8, it actually constitutes a sacred oath that Paul takes before the Philippian church. He starts with a sentence by saying, "God is my witness," and so invokes the sacred name. Please also notice that when Jesus was testifying at his own trial, according to Matthew 26, he was then under oath. The point here is that oaths are not for everyday matters. They're intended to be unusual. A person may take an oath only several times in a lifetime, or perhaps never, but once it's made, it's binding. And by the way, as a side note, might I make an application? One of those oaths is your marriage vow. When you got married, you said, "In the sight of God and these witnesses, I promise." That's why this text fits so nicely with our last one. That's why divorce is such a serious matter. Now, with that as background, we're now ready to consider Jesus' words, which must now sound strange. Since he had not come to abolish the law, yet does he not here contradict himself when he says, "Do not take an oath at all"? How shall we understand him? Now, please remember that Jesus is not taking issue with the law itself, but with the way in which the Pharisees are teaching the law. So what were they saying? Well, in Jewish society, oaths, which used to be used in only unusual and solemn occasions, had become commonplace. People were using oaths in everyday conversations, and all oaths, to be valid, must be sworn by a greater power than yourself. But because of the third command, not to abuse the name of God, you had to be careful. So instead of swearing by God, which the Pharisees warned the people they must not do, people were swearing by the earth and the sun and the stars and a city and Jerusalem and the law of Moses and the temple and the king and one's parents and even by their own head. So you might say, "I swear by the sun, moon, and stars that what I'm telling you is the truth." Oaths had become a way of saying that one was really telling the truth as opposed to the other times when you might not be. And the Pharisees got into the action. Instead of teaching the proper perspective on oaths, they taught that the real issue in all of this is whether you swore by the name. So they constructed a series of rules like they normally did. If you swore by the temple, you could get out of it. But if you swore by the gold on the temple, well, you were bound. And if you swore by the altar of sacrifice in the temple, well, you could weasel your way out of that. But if you swore by the sacrifice that lay on top of the altar, well, that sacrifice was dedicated to God, so you're bound. See, in this way, they constructed a series of rules, kind of like a modern-day fine print in a contract, that stipulated under what conditions you could cancel your vow and break your word. But it was all hypocrisy. Unless you understood all the complicated oath rules, the use of oaths actually hid the truth and didn't reveal them. So when Jesus said, "Don't swear at all," what did he mean? You know, Christian people have disagreed about this, but we must not miss the most important lesson of all. More when we come back.
Jesus has now turned his attention to the important issue of the taking of oaths. It is apparent that there was confusion sown by the Pharisees' misinterpretation of the law, thus leading many to think and act in ways that didn't honor God. Dr. Neufeld has begun to shed light on the seriousness of the way we use words to reveal or conceal the truth. In the next message, we will uncover what Jesus taught about not swearing oaths in our everyday language. Back to the Bible, leading people into a dynamic relationship with God. We are excited to announce that Back to the Bible has launched a brand new website which offers all of our Bible teaching resources, including the on-air messages of Dr. John Neufeld, news about the ministry, our Bible teaching correspondent courses, an opportunity to receive our bi-monthly magazine Confident Living, and a way to support the ministry of Back to the Bible. With the new website, there is never a reason to miss another Bible teaching message from Dr. John Neufeld. And you can order every program that you hear or complete Bible teaching series on CD. So why not visit backtothebible.in today? That is backtothebible.in. Or for more information, call us at 9492-440070. That is 9492-440070.